Hi, I'm Dr. Trevor Cates. Welcome to the Spa Doctor Podcast. On today's podcast, we're talking about how to achieve emotional mastery. Sometimes our emotions, such as sadness and anger, get a hold of us. We can choose to ignore these emotions, but there is another option that can lead to a healthier emotional state. So I've invited my guest on today to talk about this. My guest is Dr. Joan Rosenberg. She's a best-selling author, speaker, consultant, media host, and a cutting-edge psychologist. As a TEDx speaker and member of the Association of Transformational Leaders, she's been recognized for her thought leadership and influence in personal development. She's a California licensed psychologist and has been featured in the critically acclaimed documentaries I Am, The Miracle Mindset, Pursuing Happiness, and The Hidden Epidemic. Dr. Rosenberg has also been on CNN's American Morning, The OWN Network, and PBS, and she hosts the Mindstream podcast, an influential and thought-provoking iTunes podcast. She's also author of the number one Amazon bestseller, Ease Your Anxiety, and an upcoming book describing her 90-second approach to emotional strength and self-confidence. On today's podcast, we discuss what is true emotional well-being, what gets in our way of achieving it, and practical steps to overcoming those obstacles so we can achieve optimal well-being and emotional mastery. So please enjoy this interview with Joan. Joan, it's great to have you on my podcast.
Well, it's a trip for me to be on, Trevor. I love when we get engaged in these conversations, so I'm really happy to be here.
Good. Well, we're talking today about emotional health and well-being, something that we all need, right? Emotional mastery and
absolutely,
and how we can achieve that. So let's, I think first, Joan, I'd love to hear more about what got you interested in this topic.
You know, it started early in my career when I was working at UCLA with women, predominantly women who had eating disorders. It didn't matter whether it was compulsive overeating or binging or anorexia. And I was totally engaged with them around that. And certainly what I realized early on and would talk to them also very early on, it was that it wasn't about food, weight, and appearance. It was about their, and that if they were dialed into anything that related to food, weight, and appearance, then they were actually on the wrong problem. And what I did instead was tell them that it was really about their thoughts, feelings, needs, and perceptions, and their difficulty tolerating, again, what was really true for them. And every time I said that to them, 99% of them went, yep, that's true. And then we could dial into the real problem. And around that time, I kind of drew a diagram, and that diagram has been the template for kind of the rest of my work for the following 25 plus years. And the key thing for me around this, Trevor, is that people really, as hard and as difficult as how we think, what we think and how we think gets us into trouble, like negative self-talk, I'm so stupid, that was really foolish, I'm so those kinds of things. I found that dealing with unpleasant feelings was harder. So the journey has really been to try to understand two things. One is, what is it that makes it so difficult for us to deal with unpleasant feelings? And the second is, how does all of that relate to self-confidence? And so that's really been kind of the thrust and the basis of my work the past 2.5 decades or more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great. And it's great awareness and that you're able to help people in that way bring that awareness to people. Yeah. So what is emotional health and well-being? And this is a lot of talk about this. And what exactly is well-being? Is there a definition for it?
Yes, there are many. There's many ways to slice that answer, if you will, Trevor. But the one that I like to use the most is from Dr. Dan Siegel. He talked about it in his book Brainstorm, which is about adolescence, also the qualities in adolescence that we want to see carried forward into adulthood. And he actually uses the acronym ESSENCE, ESSENCE, as the basis of his definition. And ES is emotional spark. think of that as a sense of vitality and an aliveness, if you will. And the SE is social engagement. So not only do we want someone to feel vitally alive and have that, but we also want them to be able to be socially engaged, have friends, and a close-knit, you know, community, if you will, around them. The CE is creative exploration. And so that somebody has something that they want to pursue that they're totally into. And I have my letters reversed. The N is novelty. So it's emotional spark, which is the vitality, social engagement, friends, novelty is the N. So something new, I'm always learning something. And then the CE at the end is creative exploration, where I have something meaningful to pursue. So it's really, when somebody has those qualities, they're probably living a life that has a good sense of well-being to it and is emotionally healthy.
And that totally makes sense. And I was thinking, you mentioned adolescence, and I was thinking about how kids are much more, it seems like it's easier for them to express themselves, to not hold back, to just be who they are. And then what happens to us? What happens to us that we lose that?
I think they pursue that. I mean, when they're less engaged in judgment around us. So if we get totally caught up in, and I want you to hear how I say this, in what we think other people think. So it's not getting caught up in what other people are thinking. It's actually getting caught up in what we think other people are thinking about us. As soon as we get lost in that, and that nuance is important, as soon as we get lost in that, then we start to kind of shut down and go, oh, well, you know, what if they laugh at me over there, or they're gonna ridicule me over here, or whatever it might be. And so we then start to kind of close in on ourselves and narrow what we do, as opposed to continue to be expressive in the way that we watch adolescents be expressive.
And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think there are two things that there is. That we have a fear of what other people will think, and then also that we assume that we know what other people think.
Right. Well, that's, you know, and I, yes. No, go ahead.
I just think it's funny because I think a lot of times we automatically, and I'm going to stretch here maybe a little bit and say, I think women are a little bit more likely to do this, of just the assuming of, okay, well, they're thinking this and that means this. And I hear a lot of my girlfriends do that. And I catch right. myself doing it too, right. more yeah. than I, my guy friends. So I'm just kind of curious if you found that to be true.
Absolutely. I actually wrote quite a bit on this topic, and I call it how to stop worrying about what other people think of you. And what I will typically do is kind of walk people through a series of questions around this. I do agree that women do it more than men. Men do it, but women do it way more. And at least in my observation. And the key here is to start to think, it's we're not talking about what people are thinking about you. That's the first thing to kind of get rid of. It's like, it's not what other people are thinking about you. It's what you think other people are thinking about you. And if you can get that nuance in and of itself, that's going to cut a lot of people out. So I will usually ask questions like, what percent of the time do you think other people are thinking about you? And somebody might say it's kind of high. It's actually very, very low. And then I also make that distinction that I started with a moment ago. And then what I will do is ask, well, what percent of the time do you think they're thinking the exact thought you think they're thinking about you? And that should go really next to zero. And once you get that, you can start to move away from it. But the other things I talk about with this is that not only is it often a projection, meaning we're putting our thinking into somebody else's head, but it is also I think, at its core, a distraction from feeling vulnerable. So the thing that I will try to get, once I've walked somebody through that sequence, what I will try to get them to hook onto is, anytime you shift to that kind of thinking, just recognize that you're feeling vulnerable and stay present to the feeling of being vulnerable, like you could get hurt, and then go about your business, go do what you wanted to do. Because that's really what it is. It's a thought hijack of unpleasant feelings.
Yeah. So our thoughts get in the way of emotional well-being.
Absolutely. Yes.
What else tends to get in the way?
Well, again, I think that, there's so many different things that get involved here, but I think it's what we think. So we can think negative thoughts and get lost in that. And that alone will, that'll trip us off our balance. You know, it just totally destabilizes or unsettles us. And then it's how we think what we think. And the way I think about that is that those are patterns of thinking. So for instance, we magnify little things that are bad, or we minimize the good stuff coming our way. Those are what I would call patterns. The cognitive behavioral people would call them either faulty thinking or cognitive distortions, if we want to put the more psychologically jargonish word around it. But we get into these patterns. So not only do we think bad, what we think, then we get lost in the patterns of thinking. And all of that, just again, think of all of that as being, if I'm in the middle of a spider web, each concentric circle that spider does, think of that as another pattern of thinking. And all it does is lead us to more and more, you know, a smaller self and actually a more depressed self. What we think, how we think it, and the ways we choose to behave in the world. And then the other one that to me is so central to everything I do is how we experience and move through and express our unpleasant feelings. Because I think the experience of unpleasant feelings and the expression of unpleasant feelings is so important. And I'm not just dialed into unpleasantness, but that's what I watch get in the way.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people take unpleasant feelings, the way they deal with them is just to distract themselves, completely avoid them, and think that they're just going to go away.
Absolutely. That's what we would love. Every one of us would probably love to avoid that whole aspect of our life. Except unpleasant feelings. And again, I make the distinction. They're not bad or negative. They were actually evolutionary for us, right? There's a reason that they exist. And they exist because they were there to protect us. So we got angry for certain reasons. We get sad for certain reasons. We get disappointed. And most of that is to go be away from that source. Don't go near the thing that's hurting you. So the unpleasant feelings are actually very, very protective. And until we learn that they have a valuable place in our life, that then at that point we'll start to embrace them.
And it seems like awareness is the first part of all this that you approach. But you do have a really successful, unique approach in working with people. So can you tell us more about how you do that so that we can kind of start to work on some of this too on ourselves?
Oh, absolutely. It is simple. Some people will say it's simple but not easy. But let's call it simple and easy, and then we can go into it that way. So it was again something that happened over time, but I call it, it's one, it, the formula in essence, which some colleagues have called the Rosenberg reset, not my name for it, but is in essence one choice, eight feelings, 90 seconds. So super easy to remember. And the one choice that I want people to make is to stay as open and willing and comfortable with, if you will, their moment-to-moment experience. So it's staying in, being aware of and staying in touch with as much of your moment-to-moment experience as possible. That's the one choice. straightforward. So what that means is awareness, not avoidance. That's the easy, remember those things. The second is to understand that all one has to really be able to manage are those eight unpleasant feelings. The feelings are sadness, shame, helplessness, anger, vulnerability, embarrassment, disappointment, and frustration. Just those eight. And so people are going to go, okay, why those eight? And is it all eight at once? So no, let's answer the questions first. No, it's not all eight at one time. It's as they come. And a few of them can come together. And the second is why those eight is because those eight feelings are the most common feeling results of things not working out the way we want. So if I want to go pursue something, it could be even calling up a friend, somebody I've never met before or had just met, and I want to build a friendship, but I feel too vulnerable and I'm afraid that they're going to say no to me. And then again, what am I afraid of? I'm afraid of the disappointment. And so I won't take the action because I'm afraid of the disappointment. Right. So it's just the most common, in my mind, those are the most common feeling reactions to things not working out the way we want. So that's why those eight. And then the third part of it is the 90-second piece. And so for me, Trevor, here's kind of everything kind of comes together around this one point. I struggled, as I mentioned earlier, to really understand or wrestled with understanding why unpleasant feelings got in the way. And when I started to be aware of it's actually two or three things, again, some of it coming out of Dr. Dan Siegel's work, and that in essence, our body is our brain. So we're like a brain on two feet. And if we can start to see ourselves that way, then everything that happens in the body proper, neck below, is actually part of our brain function. And that's because Dr. Siegel looks at the brain as the brain itself plus the spinal cord running down the body. So where our nervous system is. So understand that our body's our brain. That's one piece. I hope I'm not being too sciencey here. Okay. And then the second is that something that Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor talked about in her book and her TED Talk, My Stroke of Insight. And she, again, a neuroscientist who had a stroke in her left hemisphere, which is where all the sciencey stuff we think typically resides. So she had her awareness and her right hemisphere, which is really feeling, space, all the other kinds of things that aren't language and logical and linear. And she was able to notice that when a feeling fired off from the brain, there's a rush of biochemicals or neurohormones, whatever we want to call them, that kind of rush through the body. And when those neurohormones rush through the body, then they activate bodily sensations. And it's those bodily sensations that help us know what we're feeling. So think of a sinking feeling in your stomach, or the butterfly feeling that sometimes people describe with anxiety. Or again, when you get hot, when you get angry, right? So it doesn't matter what the sensation is that we, and so it activates those bodily sensations. And then those same biochemicals, if you will, flush out of the body. And then those bodily sensations subside. So it's the bodily sensations that help us, those physical body sensations that help us know what we're feeling emotionally. And I realized that was the key. It's not that we don't want to feel the whole range of what we feel. We do. We don't want to feel the bodily sensations that help us know what we're feeling emotionally. And she said that whole kind of rush and flush process, 90 seconds. So that's the 90 seconds. So it's the one choice to stay fully aware of and in touch with as much of your moment-to-moment experience as possible, and then being able to ride one or more 90-second waves of one or more of eight unpleasant feelings. Then you can go pursue whatever you want, and you can stay fully in touch with those feelings.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems like when you bring awareness to your physical body and make that connection between what you're actually feeling, what you might just say is in your head, but actually feel in your body, that really helps us take it out of our head so much, make it like real.
Totally. Yes. And, you know, it does make it very, very real. It's very interesting. One of my roles is as a professor, and I teach graduate students how to do psychotherapy. But to your point, I asked them to notice the difference between when they were to ask, if I were to ask them a question, how do you feel? How do you feel is actually a thought question. You have to go to your head to figure out what your body is doing, as opposed to just reflecting it back, which actually gets us into the body experience. So it's like, oh, that must have left you feeling kind of sad or bummed or disappointed. It actually puts you right into your body. And so, to your point, it's very, very important for us to have way more body awareness if we actually want to be able to handle our feelings much better.
So then once people are aware of the physical feeling in their body, do you feel like that just helps people move past it to, I mean, as you're saying, you have mastery over it because, you know, you have that sort of physical connection with it? Or is there another step that people have to do beyond that?
Great question. I mean, the awareness is the first part. The staying present to the feeling is the second part. And my sense is that if we don't stay present to the feeling and actually let ourselves go through it, it's like to feel the bummed outness, to feel the disappointment, whatever it is, then we don't get the insight that comes with moving through the feeling. So I want people to stay present to what they're experiencing long enough that they actually then are able to access the insight that can come. Then it's taking the insight and doing one of three things with it. It's either making a decision with it, it's expressing yourself, or it's taking an action.
Mm-hmm. So can you give me an example of insight that somebody might have if they go through this process?
Sure. Let's think of relationship challenges are probably the most common experience that people have. And let's say you're dating somebody and that person says they're going to call and doesn't, or they say they're going to go do X and they don't. And then now that starts to be a repeated pattern. And there's a part of you that's going, I don't trust this person. I don't, whatever. But you don't want to see it that way, so you keep on avoiding that and pushing it aside and going, oh, but I really love him, or I really love her, or whatever it might be. And you keep dismissing the thing that you actually have awareness about. And then it happens again, and it's just enough where you go, oh, wait a minute, I actually really don't like this. In fact, I'm actually pretty angry about it. And so then what ends up happening is you take that anger and you go, I got a decision to make here. So what am I going to do? Am I just going to cut this guy off or this woman off? Or am I going to say something? No, it's important enough to me to say something. So now you're making decisions with the information. You're taking the anger that you're allowing yourself to experience. You're making decisions with the information. And then the next step maybe to take action, which would be to either express yourself and go, hey, bud, or hey, so-and-so, I really don't like what's happening here, and to effect change, or you go, I'm done, I'm out. So you start to make use of the unpleasantness as knowledge, if you will. And so that's how I would say the insight can then move into those three things.
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of times we, like you're saying, you can ignore it. That's one option, but it's
It
not.
is.
It tends to, especially in relationships, you just get more and more bitter, or just dwell on it more and get more in this. Well, he must be having an affair, or all these different things that can possibly go through your head, and you're making up stories instead of just saying, okay, what am I going to do about this? I can't just keep it in my head. I've got to.
Right.
You gotta move past it because it's not a fun place to be. And a lot of times you have the relationship and maybe the person actually has a really good excuse. And then also it opens up a dialogue of saying, oh, I didn't realize that bothered you. Let me communicate better with you about, when my plans change or
Right. Yeah.
whatever that is. And it
Yeah.
opens up a dialogue, or the person just says, tough, that's just how I am. And then you're like, okay, well,
Exactly.
I'm out.
Exactly. But it takes us staying present to that unpleasantness to be able to access the rest of the information that we then need to act on. So, or can use to act on. So yeah. So that's how I would say it's like then taking the information to apply it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting. I want to go back to
Sure.
the different emotions. Can you name the eight ones again?
Sadness, shame, helplessness, anger, vulnerability, embarrassment, disappointment, and frustration.
Okay. So now I noticed that you don't have anxiety.
I do
And
not.
in that list of emotions, and you and I have talked about anxiety a little bit, and I think that, I actually read your anxiety book. What's the title of the anxiety, the full title?
It's called Ease Your Anxiety, and it's how to build confidence, emotional strength, and self-esteem. Or I can't even remember the ending title, but the confidence, emotional strength,
Yeah, I
inner
don't
peace, and inner
remember.
peace. Inner peace. That's what it
So
was.
I took it with me. I went with my father to a doctor appointment, the doctor's appointment that he had to have a procedure done, and I knew we were going to be there for a few hours. So I took it with me and I actually read it out loud to him as
No
during the
kidding.
appointment. And it was really interesting. And so it was really kind of great to go through all the different points of that. But I know you have a unique take on anxiety. So share
Right.
with everybody why you don't have anxiety in that list.
Okay. That's a great question. I love that you did that, and I'm curious about the end result. But I think of anxiety, broadly speaking, as a cover for the unpleasant feelings. Think of anxiety as being kind of a secondary reaction. And I parse it out several different ways. So the first one is that it's unexperienced and unexpressed feeling. So what I will watch often is that people will be feeling something, like anger, for instance, or sadness or disappointment, the kind of the big three. And they don't want to express it to the person they're feeling it towards, or what, there's something going on. And rather than expressing it, when they shut it down, now they're covering the unpleasant feeling. When they shut it down and don't express it, it has to show up as something else. That energy and those reactions don't go nowhere, right? So then they start to feel like the anxious feelings in our body. So think of it, you can think of it as unexperienced and unexpressed feeling. You can think of anxiety as a cover or a distraction from the eight unpleasant feelings. I tie this idea of the eight unpleasant feelings to the notion of being capable and resourceful. So, or to feeling capable, I'm sorry. And so you are, I would say that when someone moves away from those unpleasant feelings and they feel anxious, then they're not feeling capable in the world. So there's many different ways for me to kind of to talk about it. So.
And it's interesting because how many times do we say that? We say, oh, I'm feeling anxious, or you hear people say, oh, I've got so much anxiety about this. It's something that we
Yes.
use a lot. And I mean, generalized anxiety disorder is a diagnosis that therapists give pretty regularly. But
Yeah.
so what does that mean then?
No, It means that we have a lot of people who are dismissing and who are dismissing their true feelings. I actually think there's two diagnoses that I would actually challenge, and I realize this is going to be me being a little provocative today, but to your point about generalized anxiety, I think that most mental health professionals don't make the distinctions that I make, and as a result, we have those, in quotes, disorders. Frankly, I think a lot of depression is that what we would call, that people get identified with depression, and I think most of that, a great percentage of that, there's no way for me to put numbers on it, is actually people disconnected from their true selves or disconnected from their real feelings. Then if they were accessing those real feelings, the depression would go away. And the same is true for the anxiety, that if they were accessing their real feelings, this generalized anxiety disorder would disappear. And the thing that I would invite people to do, based on what you'd said, is to ask themselves just a couple questions. And that is, if you were to think that based on you watching this interview or this Skype conversation, that I was in your head and I said, well, if I took all the words for anxiety away from you, what would you really be feeling? Dial your thinking into that question and let yourself really go to that place within yourself and not let yourself just call it anxiety. Instead, allow yourself to go deeper and see if you can identify and use one of the eight, one or more of the eight feelings. That's all you have to do. Don't make it complicated and watch what happens. Because I think people really know the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And then to go back to your book, me reading it
Yes.
to my dad, it was it was funny because it was the book that I just had put in my suitcase because I knew I was going to be interviewing on. I wanted to read some of your work, and so I just grabbed it on my way to the doctor appointment. Didn't really think about the fact that this is a very relevant topic for him. And so, I asked my dad how was that for me reading it to you, and he said, "Well, it's really interesting. It's definitely a good distraction." And it was we created some humor around it, and it was so
Got
it ended up working out really well. And the doctor thought it was really bizarre that I was doing this, but the way I kind of I reframed it, I would read just parts of it. I didn't read the whole thing,
Oh,
but I
got it.
read parts of it, and I said, "Here are the really practical parts of it. Let's talk about breathing and awareness, and so some of the things that you talk about." And I don't want to give away all the things in your book
Oh,
because I think people should read it.
sure.
But is there anything that you want to share from that book though, since we have brought it up?
No, well, no. I mean, the essence of it is that if people get the book, what they should understand is when I reference the unpleasant feelings in the book, I'm actually talking about those eight that I've named here, and the other is really if you want to cut it to the core, so use the question. If I were no longer to use the word anxiety and anything else that smacks of anxiety, like apprehensive or scared or whatever, then are frightened because you can't use those words either. Then, if what they're really feeling, then stay present to the feeling. One choice, eight feelings, 90 seconds, and then watch what happens because more information is going to come to you, and you're gonna end up feeling so much more comfortable in your own skin. And it's like that's what we all want. So the more we stay true to what's really going on for us, the happier and healthier we become. Period. End of story, kind of.
Right. And that's emotional mastery, right?
That is emotional mastery.
Well, Joan, it's been such a pleasure interviewing you today. Tell people how they can find you, and we'll be sure to share whatever links you share with us. We'll be sure to share them on the website.
Sure. The easiest and most straightforward is drjoanrosenberg.com. And that's all one word. And then I'm on Twitter with the same handle, Facebook, I believe the same handle, LinkedIn, probably the same handle, or might be different on LinkedIn. And then people, there's two TED Talks. There's a TED Talk that's centered around this very topic, and there's a second TED Talk that's centered around what should be called the unexpected riches of grief, which is something I call disguised grief. And so people can take a look at that on, both of those are on YouTube. And if people want, there's on my website, they can, there's a place for them to access some smaller portion of the book that we were, the Ease Your Anxiety book, as a kind of an opt-in, if you will.
And where can people get your books? You have multiple.
Amazon is probably the easiest.
Okay, great.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks so much, Joan. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks so much, Trevor.
I hope you enjoyed this interview today with Dr. Joan Rosenberg. To learn more about Dr. Rosenberg, you can go to thespadoctor.com, go to the podcast page with her interview, and you'll find all the information and links there. And while you're there, I invite you to join the Spa Doctor community, and you can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. And if you haven't done so already, I recommend that you get your customized skin report at theskinquiz.com. It's free, takes just a few moments, and you'll find out what messages your skin is trying to tell you about your health and what you can do about it. Just go to theskinquiz.com. Also, I invite you to join me on social media, on Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and join the conversation with us. And I'll see you next time on the Spa Doctor Podcast.